Welcome to Beauty at Work. We are in between seasons at the moment, so please enjoy this clip from one of our episodes.
First of all, that I think that gulf exists between the sciences and the romantic view of the arts, which dominates today, which says that creativity is self-expression, that the main goal here is to assert the self and to reveal the psychology of the artist. And really, the successful artist is simply one who conveys that emotion and in some way is able to influence those who see it, either to, if not to share the emotion, to understand it, regardless of what that emotion is. I mean, it could be blazing, destructive anger that, if exercised, shall we say, would cause great harm to those around them. Well, in the romantic view, that doesn't matter. As long as I do that successfully, that's fine. I was temperamentally, I was resistant to that, mainly because of my artistic training. But you can see how that doesn't suit scientific investigation, which assumes there is an objective truth. You're looking at an object and trying to discern something about it, for example, or the properties of it, or looking at the world around you. And it is assumed that it is real and that it has certain physical properties. And as a scientist, I'm able to look at those and investigate them and perhaps learn some aspect of that truth. Now, what I liked, actually, and this came to me through my Catholic faith, was I started to look at the way that art was understood prior to that romantic view. So it suited me far more to think of art as something that is trying to reveal the truth of what you paint in just the same way that a scientist does. And the other thing that I would say is that people worry about beauty. And I think that philosophically, I don't know how deeply I can go, but we talk about certain things just through their existence having certain properties. They're called transcendent properties of being, transcendentals. But to the degree that an artist portrays something as it really is, if we work on the assumption that all things are good, though some things are not as good as others, shall we say, everything has a beauty to it. If we can demonstrate the goodness of what's there, then the art should be beautiful. It should reflect that. Now, beauty is very difficult to measure. I'm not aware of any way that it can be quantified in itself. But that doesn't mean that there isn't that we can't assume that it is a property of what we're looking at. That the beauty of a landscape, trees in fields with animals, that people will travel across the globe to go and see this. That is it simply that each person is responding in that way, and you could somehow train that out of me through culture, that not to appreciate the fields or something. I know certainly environment has some influence on what I appreciate, but most people today would appreciate the beauty of certain things. There is some conformity. Now, the fact that it's difficult to quantify or difficult to know precisely doesn't mean that it isn't true. And for the scientists, I would say that conversely, there is an overconfidence in the scientific world, in some aspects of it, as to the degree to which science can ascertain truth. And what I'm thinking of here is that historically, the great thing that allowed for huge progress in scientific research is the development of the scientific method. And that method relies on an assumption that man's ability to use reason to understand the natural order is actually very bad. It's not that it's strong, it's that it's bad. And therefore, we can't trust the hypothesis to reveal much about the natural world. So the scientist looks at the data, comes up with an idea, develops a hypothesis, but according to the scientific method, we won't trust that until it's been borne out by experiment, ideally time and time again. In other words, science is basically a process of trial and error, and you're backfilling the conclusions with the theory afterwards. The success of science is actually the opposite of what most people think it is. It recognizes its weakness, or man's weakness, to understand the natural order through reason alone, and therefore relies on experiment. And this actually goes back to a debate, I understand, between Newton and Kant. Kant wanted to develop a scientific method that didn't need any experiments whatsoever. Newton said, no, that's not going to work. We've got to experiment, because we can't, otherwise we're just not clever enough to do it. Now, with regards to beauty and what constitutes the beautiful, what's the experiment we do? How do we test that out? The answer is that traditionally they look to tradition. They look to the work of artists of the past to say what subjects, what topics, what purposes for art have been shown to have appealed to many people over a long period of time. And for the most part, we'll rely on that. And certainly current circumstances might mean that I have to change it a bit, but I'm going to be cautious about doing that because I recognize that my ability to produce something that's good and beautiful is flawed, really. I want to rely on the evidence of past people. So those are the first things. I'm expecting you're going to push me on the mathematics of beauty, which I'll get to in a second.
Sure, sure.
But I think there are certain similarities in the approach of the artist and the scientist that many people don't realize that actually date back to the time when artistic method and scientific method, they both come from the same approach to investigation of the world around us, actually, historically. The Romantics broke from that. They're the ones who said, doesn't matter what you think, as long as I feel it and I can communicate it, that's fine. That's a very different approach. And that's where the dichotomy appears, I think.
Right. This raises a lot of really interesting questions, but do talk about beauty in art and science, right? So I think there are a lot of scientists, particularly the closer you are to mathematics, there are a lot of judgments about beauty that are made around what counts as a beautiful equation and so on. How would you define beauty in similar ways in art and science, or are they getting at different kinds of things?
So the scientist will talk about a beautiful solution, or a mathematician, a beautiful solution to a question. Generally, what they mean is that it's powerful and simple, and so they feel that the logic is powerful and simple. What I would say is that when the scientist develops a hypothesis, he doesn't typically reason it out, and I'd be interested to see what the scientists would argue, but typically what happens is that you're aware of a pattern of what occurs. So you're looking at the language of science is typically mathematics, not always, but typically, and that dominates. But you're effectively saying, I could see a pattern here, an order, and when I take the wide view, and then there's something missing, and that missing point goes there. Let's test that out. And ultimately, it's rare that the hypothesis is produced through reason. It's very often produced through an intuitive guess. It's clearly it's in the whole. Only the scientist who is aware of all the theory, who's aware of the mathematics, can make that leap. But effectively, it's intuition, it's guesswork, and then you test it. You say, that seems to work, and then you try and explain it, and that's where you come up with the theorem that, or the mathematical equation that explains the new thing. And then you try and predict something else that has never occurred before. You test that, and that becomes a theorem. goes from hypothesis to theorem. Now, the ability to see the pattern of things is actually the ability, the same as the ability to apprehend beauty. Beauty recognizes the relationship between things that are appropriate to what it is. It sees a pattern in the world and is able to complete it. And so that's what creativity is. It's being able to spot that pattern. Now, the science, there are cases where scientists have done this. They've looked at plots on a graph. The one that was brought to my attention was a scientist in the 60s, but it's just such a nice example, called Murray Gell-Mann, I think his name is pronounced, who discovered a quark, a subatomic particle. But there were 9 of these particles known, and he looked at the plot on a graph of these 9 particles, and they effectively looked like a pyramid with the point missing. And the only reason that he investigated the existence of this 10th quark was it looked to him as though there ought to be another one in that position. And so it was actually an arrangement mathematically. They don't arrange themselves like this in space. It's a mathematical plot that has 4 dots on the baseline, 3 above it, 2 above it, and then you have 1 above it. And so it's 10 dots in the pattern of a pyramid, effectively. Now, what's interesting when I read that is that if you go back to the ancient Greeks all the way to Pythagoras, by reputation, they're described by Plato, they tried to describe the pattern of order musically, mathematically, in a way, and look for those patterns that delighted people because they associated this with the beauty, and they felt that if they could reproduce those patterns that they thought they could observe in nature, and especially in music, in buildings, and in other things, then if they were correct, you'd look at the buildings and you'd say they were beautiful. They looked at the proportions of man, for example, and tried to describe them mathematically and then use those same proportions in buildings. And the premise here is that if we find man generally beautiful, good in his being, and then we copy that in buildings, if it's part of the mathematics of it, then the building will be beautiful. Now, how do you test that hypothesis? You then look at the building and you say, is it beautiful? And, of course, that will vary depending on different people because beauty is hard to know. But the fact that millions go and visit ancient Greek temples in Ephesus or Athens, for example, suggests to me that they probably got something right. There is a similar approach here. Now, just to come back to Murray Gell-Mann and the quarks, the pattern, I think it's a coincidence. I'm not going to say it's more than that. But the pattern of those quarks in the pyramid is something that Pythagoras described as the fundamental pattern of the universe, because it was a way of symbolically representing musical harmony, which they felt was an audio sign, if you like, of the pattern of order that pervaded the cosmos. And he called it the Tetractys, and it had almost sort of religious significance for the Pythagoreans, but it was exactly that same pattern of the 10 dots in that arrangement that subsequently Murray Gell-Mann found to be the basis of the arrangement of subatomic particles. So you read into that what you will. I'm not going to make any claims beyond that, but I would say that the Pythagoreans wouldn't have been surprised, shall we say, at that discovery.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there are people who argue that beauty could be misleading at times. And I think particularly in theoretical physics, there is this argument that on the one hand, you do have this experience of people like Gell-Mann, and sometimes it does seem like the beautiful solution or the beautiful equation turns out to be experimentally verified. But at other times, it doesn't. And there have been a number of cases where theories that appear beautiful in the beginning turn out to be wrong, and then those that turned out to be correct were ones that were initially kind of seen as ugly. There was some kind of resistance to embrace them. But eventually, once it turned out that they were right, we changed our judgment of what counts as beautiful. I wonder if you have any thoughts on the, you know, when beauty can be misleading and what it takes to correct our perceptions there.
I would repeat the point that about beauty that I said about scientific investigation. There's no measure by which we can be certain about those judgments. And any particular individual is as likely to be wrong about it as any other. We only really get a sense of it when we trust human nature to seek out something that's beautiful, we look across many people over a long period of time. So in the artistic field, you say it's those things that have transcended their own time. Even then, it's not an infallible guide. It's just the best we have, I would say. Now, in regard to the beauty of a mathematical equation, it's a difficult one because we're talking allegorically, right, or metaphorically. Are we really saying that the equation is beautiful? It's a response in the scientist. As Einstein said, the answer's simple. It comes from God. He felt there was something there, but it's always possible to make mistakes. And then the other thing is that we do become accustomed. We can be affected by what we see. We develop that sense of what is beautiful and good. So let's assume that what previously was ugly turns out to be correct scientifically, and then as people look into it, they start to think of it as beautiful because they appreciate its simplicity or its however you're judging the beauty of an equation. You appreciate it in other ways. Well, that is part of the learning process. And that in the end, though, the test of whether it really is true, of course, we know in science that most theorems are at the very least are revised in time. So I don't think it's the last word in what we're going to say about it. Scientists are always ready to revise their theorems, otherwise they're not authentic scientists. But even if it's true, then we can develop that taste. You know, that's why if you want to develop an ability to see what is beautiful, in the training, what you do is you expose people and analyze things that are generally accepted to be beautiful. So the scientist, if you wanted to increase his ability intuitively to understand or to create that new equation, to see the new pattern in the order, you develop their ability to apprehend beauty because then their natural appreciation of the patterns, the relationships between things will be enhanced. Now, in the scientific context, you may study equations that are generally accepted to be beautiful and have been over a long period of time and have not been revised, and then start to ask yourself, what is beautiful about those? And then as you expose yourself to them, that will influence your taste and you'll start to look for things that tend to correspond to that canon of great works of mathematical beauty as you try to develop a new equation. Similarly, the artist learns how to appreciate the beauty of a particular tradition by copying and imitating initially great works of art. He or she immerses himself in the beauty of that tradition. And so then you have to decide, well, what's the canon that we're going to choose? To a certain degree, you're relying on people who understand the tradition to pick it out. But as a principle, you're looking for those things that appear to have been appreciated over a long period of time by many people. And you're relying on human consensus of human nature as far as possible. for something like this. It's the best we have. You actually trust in the common taste, not in the elites. Typically, if somebody who study aesthetics at a deep level, that those who've been to university, especially the modern humanities, they have to have good taste educated out of them, I would say, as a principle. They learn not to trust their common sense, their automatic response. And frankly, they're going against what most people would appreciate. You know, they would go to Florence and say, I prefer the modern building on the outskirts because it's brutalist and this is wonderful. Whereas 20 million other people say, well, no, I'm going to the Duomo in the center because that's what I think is beautiful. I don't care what you think, you elites.
Beauty at Work is brought to you by Templeton Religion Trust. If you enjoyed this clip, go check out the full episode. And please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a review. It really helps get the word out about the show. Thanks, and see you next time.